Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories dated December 24th through December 30th, 2020. We'll start with the article headlined Equity and Diversity Work Study Group Issues Report by Steve Hoffman, December 30th. There was one fact that did not surprise an Equity and Diversity Work Study Group, which was formed by the Monticello School District this fall in response to racial unrest throughout the country. From that data, when looking at diversity, we determined what we kind of already knew. We lack in the area of diversity, said Monticello High School Principal Adam Clapp, a co-facilitator of the 35-member committee with White Heath Elementary Principal Emily Wagner. The group that dug into data that was available, such as state report card and essentials survey materials. Their work included not only the study of racial equity, but that of other potentially marginalized groups, including the LGBTQ community, and the fact that lower family incomes have been known to produce significant achievement gaps. Some of the group members were surprised to find that we have over 20%, 24%, in free and reduced lunch, said Clapp, when a report was presented to the school board on December 16th. Figures show that lower family incomes gives those students an average of 18 to 35% less achievement when it comes to meeting and exceeding state standards, depending on the subject. Teachers were asked to compile a survey of their curriculum, which, with the data, was also taken into account by the study group. Do we cover Black history throughout all of our classes and curriculum? Or is it just in February we do a few special things and that's it? Widener told the school board. We want to make sure we highlight the achievements of all people of color across the spectrum of all subjects and all disciplines. The group met 5 times, 2 in person and 3 remotely. It created some discussion on what we do. How do we support underrepresented groupings, those marginalized groups? Do we have opportunities for them to feel included or feel like they have support, said Clapp. A list of 15 considerations was included for the school board to consider. They included 1. EDWSG will support MCUSD number 25 in its ongoing commitment to promoting equity, honoring and celebrating diversity, and ensuring the inclusion of all students. 2. Equity and Diversity Annual Report presented to the board by superintendent or designee each year. 3. EDWSG meets twice a year to review data, resources, practices, etc. 4. Provide for professional development district-wide and subject-specific for teachers and staff related to anti-racism, dealing with poverty, recognizing implicit bias, how to facilitate discussions of difficult or potentially controversial topics in the classroom, vetting of curricular materials to ensure accuracy and lack of bias. 5. Recruitment and consideration of diverse candidates for district vacancies. 6. Review posters, signs, and decorations in the classrooms and hallways, and assess which groups are represented and which groups are not. Ensure that diversity is representative and celebrated. 7. Review curriculum so that we are effectively and consistently including and teaching topics in equity and diversity. 8. Review current literature resources and allocate funding for resources to include a variety of voices from traditionally marginalized groups. 9. Explore course offerings at MHS that are focused on world culture. 10. Host speakers throughout the school year from diverse backgrounds. 11. Intervene early and consistently with low-income students. 12. Create student exchange programs with other schools in the area. 13. Review 5 essential survey data and develop district surveys for students and parents regarding their feelings about equity, diversity, and inclusion within the schools. I think we've already moved forward in this area just by having had these discussions, said Widener. Whether any formal action will be taken up is up to the school board. which will consider it in January. Once the report was presented to the board, I wanted to give you a month to chew on it a little bit, and I'll make some recommendations at the January board meeting for consideration, said School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman. Board members were appreciative of the work done by the study group. I appreciate all the work that's been put into this. We don't have a very diverse school or community necessarily, but a big part of what we do is to prepare students for the next exposure in college, etc., said Kevin Fry. He added that, although the Monticello district and population is not diverse at this time, it is still important to prepare students for life outside of the school walls. The better you can prepare somebody for what are more diverse areas of the state and country and so forth, I think it's that much more helpful, he said. Study group member April Blacker, also a teacher in another district, felt the very fact of introspection would help in recruitment efforts. When we talk about recruitment and retaining that diverse staff, this casts our district in a light where staff is going to want to come, said Blacker. Ivesdale Butcher Thriving by Anthony Zillis, The News Gazette, December 29th. While Ivesdale businesses have closed, including the popular bar The Blarney Stone, Aaron's Farm Meats and Butcher Shop is busier than ever, and has been so for much of the pandemic. We've been extremely busy, employee Jennifer Hendershot said. When Tyson Foods slowed down on their production due to COVID, a lot of people weren't able to get enough meat for the week for their family. So they would call us or get a quarter of beef or a side of beef so they could fill their freezers. It's cheaper than buying retail cuts individually anyway. The small shop in the tiny town of 254 people has seen an influx of both interested buyers and farmers who couldn't take their beef to larger butcher shops. Normally, a steady stream of cattle would come through, keeping the store busy but not overwhelmed. Now it's a massive wave that has the shop's schedule full until the end of 2021. Throughout the year, we were very steady before COVID-19, Hendershot said. Every month, we were busy. However, most farmers and most customers never had to wait longer than 4 weeks. However, because of COVID, they were having to wait sometimes 2 months to get their meat. One farmer, though, doesn't have to wait. Owner Randy Ahrens is one of the rare farmers in the area who also owns a slaughter shop. For Hendershot, it's no surprise that a small-town butcher shop is a go-to place when grocery stores weren't stocked. I think a lot of people were wanting to know where their meat came from, she said. They were wanting to get something that was farm-fresh, hormone-free, antibiotic-free, and they wanted to know how their meat was raised. Featured. Chamber has productive year, despite pandemic, by Steve Hoffman, December 29th. The Monticello Chamber of Commerce had big plans for 2020. A realtor lunch to help the real estate community, social events, member lunches, the annual Chamber Expo, and Christmas parade. The organization quickly shifted gears in March when COVID-19 canceled most of that. Instead of helping mostly dues-paying chamber members, it was time to help all businesses in town, one struggling for survival amid state-mandated shutdowns. Our goal this entire time was to help with all businesses in town, whether they were a chamber member or not, said Jim Singleton, the 2020 chamber president. Our job is to help businesses, and it was time to get away from, oh, you're not a member, we're not going to assist you. We were all in this together. 2020 was also a challenge for first-year director Shelley Crawford Stock, who had been installed as both the chamber and Monticello Main Street director less than 2 months prior to the business shutdowns in March. But when coronavirus set through the world on its end, she sprung into action. Within days of in-person dining being banned in the spring, her Eat Around Monticello Facebook page offered a one-stop shop for those still wishing to patronize local restaurants. In conjunction with the city of Monticello, Parklets allowed for outdoor dining to be expanded downtown. It was so popular that the Parklets continued into November, and there's a good chance they will return in 2021, COVID or not. In addition, a gift card program allowed people to get immediate revenue to restaurants and bars. Crawford Stock told chamber members at the annual meeting held online December 14th. Other activities that were held included the weekly farmers market, a state of the city address via Zoom, a pet-friendly woof stock, a couple of outdoor concerts on the courthouse square, and drive-by and online visits with Santa earlier this month. A couple of businesses even held grand openings during the pandemics, Holly's Country Canning and Tractor Supply Company. Businesses seemed appreciative, with chamber membership increasing from 100 to about 150 businesses in 2020. We had quite a bit going on. We put a lot into the mix. They were different things done differently than we normally would have done them, said Crawford Stock. It has been a very interesting year, as everybody knows. The chamber has worked very hard to adapt and change a lot of stuff on the fly. I credit a lot of that to Shelley and her quick thinking, added Singleton. With vaccines starting to be administered, all are hoping for a more normal 2021, but Crawford Stock said she will still be cautious, at least for now. Next year, we still don't know when we will be able to operate normally. It's a matter of figuring out what are the smart ways to help out our members in this coming year. It's still going to be a little different, Crawford Stock said at the meeting. Even with that, she hopes to do plenty next year. A rescheduled realtor lunch, after-hours gatherings, including one at the Monticello Railway Museum, chamber luncheons, and more if guidelines allow. Behind the scenes, Crawford Stock said she also plans to continue to improve and expand communication methods, improve operational efficiency, expand membership locally, and possibly include Bement businesses since their Chamber of Commerce is currently inactive, rebuild the chamber committee structure and volunteer base, and find opportunities to offer promotion, solutions, and benefits to membership. As for tourism efforts, hopes are to continue radio, online, and print advertising to promote the community. Chamber directors elected. A 12-member slate of directors was also approved at the online annual meeting December 14th. They include immediate past president, Jim Singleton. President, Rory Wright, First State Bank. Vice president, Sarah Ross, Kirby Medical Center. Directors, Kyle Kester, Kester Homes. Jim Ayers, CIM Tech. Pete Bergstrom, Bergies. Vic Zimmerman, Monticello School District. Nicole Stewart, Hatfield Book Company. Molly Loftus, Kelly's Accounting Services. Jeff Zumwalt, Bespoke Gift Company. Bailey Milton, Piatt County Farm Bureau. And Jim Stetson, Piatt County FS. Crawford Stock also thanked the major chamber sponsors, First State Bank, Kelly's Accounting Service, CIM Tech Filtration, Burgess & Klein, Subway of Monticello, and BNA Screen Printing. Vaccinations Begin for Staff at Kirby by Steve Hoffman, December 29th. Kirby Medical Center in Monticello has begun administering COVID-19 inoculations after receiving 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine on Monday. Hospital Chief Clinical Officer Jennifer Moss said frontline employees are receiving them first, with a goal of getting doses to all 200 employees who have opted in by the end of next week. There's a potential for side effects, so we don't want to vaccinate, say, the whole emergency department on one day. So we have to stagger the vaccinations within the department, said Moss. A second dose is then required 30 days later. Employees at satellite clinics will also be vaccinated at the main Monticello facility. We're so excited to have received it, added Moss. Everybody wants things to get back to normal, and honestly, this feels like the first step of doing something that may help us get back to normal, or a new normal, whatever that may be. A total of 21 employees received doses on Monday afternoon, the first being nurse practitioner Jen Meinhardt, who happened to be at the front of the line at 2:30 p.m. It just so happened she was the first one to show up. She sees a lot of patients in our quick care in the clinic, so she gets exposed quite a bit. So it was kind of nice she was the first person here at Kirby to be vaccinated, added Moss. Kirby has a staff of about 325 people, but that includes part-time workers who may be getting the vaccine elsewhere. Some have also opted out due to health considerations that include pregnancy. Those who have tested positive for COVID-19 are also advised to wait 90 days before being vaccinated. The vaccine is not yet available to the general public, but Moss said the hospital will keep people informed. As soon as we have vaccines available to the public, we'll blast that out as well as we can and have an organized effort in cooperation with the health department to implement it, she said. Obituaries. George R. Leach, 85, of Monticello, went to be with the Lord on Sunday, December 27th, at Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy. Private family services will be held. A public graveside ceremony will take place at Monticello Township Cemetery at 12 p.m. on Monday, January 4th, and will include military honors. COVID-19 guidelines, wearing of a mask, and social distancing will be followed. Memorial contributions may be made to Illinois Veterans Home, Quincy, Attention Activity Fund, 1707 North 12th Street, Quincy, Illinois, 62301, or Monticello United Methodist Church, 2020 East Washington Street, Monticello, Illinois, 61856. Terry K. Young, 71, of Monticello, passed away December 22nd at Carl Hospital, Urbana. A gathering in his memory will be planned at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. St. Philomena Catholic Church, 1301 North Market Street, Monticello, 61856. Or the Monticello Athletic Boosters 1 Sage Drive, Monticello, Illinois, 61856. Alberta L. Stone, 85, of Mansfield, passed away Monday, December 21st. A graveside service will be held Saturday, January 2nd, 2021, at 10 a.m. in Grandview Memorial Gardens, Champaign. Memorial donations may be made to Mansfield United Methodist Church or Mansfield Food Pantry, Martha's Cupboard. Deanna Yvonne Kallenbach, known as Bubba to those who loved her, passed away on Saturday, December 26th, at the age of 82, or 65 if she was ever asked. The family requests those who wish to express sympathy to consider making a donation to their favorite charity in Deanna's name. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Barbara Karen Woodard, 83, of Decatur, passed away December 23rd, at her residence. A private funeral service was held on Wednesday, December 30th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Memorials, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, or Our Lady of the Holy Spirit. Frank James Ensign Sr. of Monticello passed away on Thursday, September 24th, at his residence. A memorial service will be planned at a later date. James Rhodes, 76, of Monticello, passed away December 20th at Carl Foundation Hospital. All services are private to the immediate family because of COVID-19 pandemic and applicable government safety restraints. 30 residents have now tested positive for COVID-19 at Piatt County Nursing Home, by Steve Hoffman, December 29th. A total of 30 residents of the Piatt County Nursing Home have now tested positive for COVID-19 since December 4th, according to facility officials. There have also been 2 deaths in the past week, the first 2 of the pandemic for the nursing home. In addition, 21 members of the nursing home staff have also tested positive during the pandemic. A report released Monday by the DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department registered 37 new cases of COVID-19 in DeWitt County between December 23rd and December 25th, bringing its total to 917 since April. That includes 19 deaths, including one of a male in his 70s, announced on Monday. Piatt County totaled 34 new cases in the three-day period, and 1,059 overall. With the two deaths at the nursing home, the county has had 8 deaths during the pandemic. New cases by city: DeWitt County, Clinton, 29, Farmer City, 3, Waynesville, 2, Kenny, 1, Weldon, 1, Hayworth, 1, Piatt County, Monticello, 16, Whiteheath, 5, Bement, 4, DeLand, 2, Atwood, 2, Millmine, 1, La Place, 1, Cerro Gordo, 1, Hammond, 1, Mansfield, 1. Most students will be in person at Monticello for second semester, by Steve Hoffman, December 24th. Monticello school officials expect about 85% of the student body to be learning in person at the start of the second semester, as several have indicated they will shift from remote to in-class learning. School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman told the school board on December 16th that the remote option will still be offered for those who feel safer learning from home the second semester. Lincoln Elementary School Principal Mary Vogt said an influx of more in-person students means that 3 of the 4 preschool sections will be on-site next semester. 2 of the 4 are being offered remotely this semester. Middle school principal Mark Hughes said a shift to a block schedule, which allows for longer class periods, is working out so far at MMS. He noted that teachers do not feel as rushed when communicating concepts to students. In other action, the board approved the hiring of 4 long-term substitutes: Sherry Wright Vesna, special education aide; Trasha McCall, first grade, December 14th through 22nd; Liz Galbo, Monticello High School secretary, January 4th through February 25th; and Heather High, first grade, January 4th through February 26th. Approved the hiring of Erin Tracy as a full-time secretary for Whiteheath Elementary School. Heard from Clapp that the boys' basketball team had the second-best grade point average in the area, and did not feel the district should enter into a cooperative sports agreement that would allow Bement students to participate in Monticello's soccer and wrestling programs. Bement school officials had reached out for a possible co-op of those sports, which currently are not offered in the Bement-Cerro Gordo cooperative contract. Figures announced for opening of deer hunting season, by Dave Hinton, the News Gazette, December 24th. While deer totals were down statewide during the opening weekend of the Illinois firearm season, the numbers were generally up in area counties. Hunters bagged 47,147 deer during the November 20th through 22nd period, down from 50,173 during the same period in 2019. Area hunters brought in more deer during the first season than last year, led, as usual, by Vermilion County, where they bagged 329 deer during the first season compared with 323 in 2019. Other area counties and their 2020 and 2019 totals: Champaign, 162, 133. DeWitt, 220, 206. Douglas, 115, 88. Ford, 79, 73. Iroquois, 321, 339. Livingston, 279, 275. McLean, 407, 347. And Piatt, 89, 83. Peter Schlichting, Deer Project Manager for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, said he believes wet weather in southern Illinois might be the cause for the lower statewide numbers. He said it's difficult to know if the COVID-19 pandemic has had any impact on the deer harvest totals. "We have a call-in system to check these totals," Schlichting said, "so we don't have much direct interaction with hunters. The second firearm season is set for December 24th through Sunday, and hunting permit sales are up a little bit, so maybe people are more interested this time because they have more time to hunt," Schlichting said. He said in three area counties, IDNR wants to increase the deer population, Champaign, Piatt, and Douglas. That's why it issued antlers-only permits for the first 15 days of the archery season in those counties to protect does. Archery season runs October 1st to January 17th. In 20 other counties, however, IDNR would like to reduce the numbers and offers an additional firearm season at the end of December and in January. During that season, hunters can only shoot does. None of those counties is in this area. Schlichting said the agency bases its decision on whether to raise or lower the deer population on the number of deer vehicle crashes, which is furnished by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Paul Gertz, owner of Sangamon River Taxidermy in Foosland, said he saw the number of deer brought to his business increase as the fall progressed. He said in October, only one or two deer were brought in, but come November, archery hunters fared better. The 2 weeks preceding the gun season, the archery hunters did real well, Gertz said. The firearm season, I didn't get inundated with deer at all at once, like I usually do. This year, three or four came in Saturday, five or six Sunday. It was not a whole bunch. Firearm season might have been a little slower than last season, but the archery more than made up for the numbers I got in. Gertz, who started the taxidermy business 30 years ago, said most of his customers come from the areas around Fairbury, Chatsworth, and Onarga. There aren't many who come from Champaign County. Gertz said the coyote population seems to be on the increase. I've had multiple clients tell me coyotes have gotten to their deer before they did, he said. By the time they found the deer that they've arrowed, the coyotes have already eaten part of it. The coyotes are active during the day now. Junior high basketball delayed, December 30th. Volleyball delay also likely. The Illinois Elementary School Association announced Tuesday that the start of boys' basketball practice would be delayed, and the possibility of a delay in girls' volleyball is also likely. From IESA Director Steve Endersley, we've received an official announcement from the governor's office that the state of Illinois remains in Tier 3 mitigations. As a result, all school activities remain paused, and no practices or interscholastic contests may be held. Boys basketball practice, which is scheduled to begin January 4th, may not start on that date, and I believe it is safe to assume that girls volleyball should be paused as well when it is scheduled to start January 11th. Please take whatever steps are necessary to make sure your boys basketball practice does not begin January 4th and girls volleyball practice does not begin January 11th. When those activities can resume, and for that matter, when any IESA activity can be held, we will immediately notify the membership, said Ensley. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories dated December 24th through December 30th. I hope you all have a very pleasant New Year's Eve and a very happy and healthy 2021. I look forward to reading you again in the new year.